The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1067. It's Tuesday, the 15th of May, 2018. By the way, check out our latest episode of our Business Lives series podcast, and you can see that at voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. And it features Abby Wright, who's the founder of Europe's largest spa booking company, Spa Bricks. And she talks about the personal sacrifices of building a market-leading company. And we've had lots of people on there. And basically, this podcast series features, you know, high-profile business people. You know, so it's worth checking out. It's quite inspirational. Okay, on today's podcast, I have Stephen Blythe, Chief Executive Officer of Expediator, XPD. And Stephen goes over their final results, which saw revenue grow 60% to £116 million. Also on the podcast, David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil, UJO. And David discusses the acquisition of further interests in Widmerpool, Gulf and Humber Basin licences, and also talks about the successful planning applications at the Biscothorpe and North Kesley licences too. Plus, I also have Stephen Chong, COO of MySquare, M-Y-S-Q, ticker there, and Stephen discusses current progress at the company, including their recent mobile money platform launch. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stephen Blythe, Chief Executive Officer of Expediator. That's XPD ticker. Stephen, thanks for joining me.
Yes, good morning.
Now, you've just released your final results for 12 months, ended the 31st December 2017. A very positive set of numbers, and we'll go through them in a bit and talk to you about the highlights and what's coming up. Before we do, Stephen, for people listening who are not aware of what you do or what the company is about, as an introduction, could you summarise what the business does, please?
Yeah, we're primarily an asset-light freight management business, split into three main divisions. One, which we started over 30 years ago, our international freight forwarding division, which primarily has been European road freight. Mm-hmm. But as a group, we will be expanding more into air and sea. We have another division which does logistics. We have the Pallex franchise in Romania, which has been highly successful. On the back of that, we'll be building contract logistics warehousing. In the UK, it's all about e-commerce and fulfillment. And our third division is our Affinity division, which provides services for over 1,700 trucking customers running about 12,500 vehicles, predominantly in Eastern Europe. They're the three divisions.
Wow. And, okay, over to the results. So growth, you know, excellent growth, impressive growth, 60% in revenues to £116 million. And can you explain a bit more in detail where this growth has come from, Stephen?
Yeah, well, primarily it's organic. And I have to say, absolute testament to the team that we have, that during an exhausting process of listing, the team have managed to keep the business going and going exceptionally well. Well, while myself and Richard have been busy dealing with the city and going up and down on the tube into London. And so the organic growth, we've had some particularly good growth in the Lithuanian office. They are an exceptional bunch of 150 people, average age 28 people. And it's, it reminds me very much of West Coast American mentality, where they all go to work because they enjoy working. So we have a great culture to the business. Huge amount of expertise and enthusiasm with the teams, who are predominantly quite young, apart from myself. And so organic growth has been fantastic. It was only 10% of the turnover increase was from acquisitions, which were towards the end of last year. So we're expecting to see in this year a full year of those results coming through. Plus, we will be looking to do more acquisitions again this year.
Understood. And you've sort of described the current environment as very positive for your business. So what are the external factors making it so positive, Stephen?
Well, we're working in areas of Europe. Whilst the UK may be Brexiting, we have most of our offices within the European sphere, and particularly in Eastern Europe, where there's good GDP growth in all of those markets. That is going to be very good for us. Of course, we're all seeing the high street decimated with e-commerce. So we, as a group, will be spending more time into developing our eShop WeDrop brand, which is all international e-commerce activity, plus our fulfillment for e-retailers. We will also be going into some new geographies. We're constantly getting customers. And as a group, Brexit is coming. Embrace it, because I don't think it's going to get reversed. And we see Brexit as a way to make money.
Yeah, interesting. And I thought you mentioned e-retailers there, but you're now working for Amazon sellers. And how significant will this be for the business, do you think?
Well, I think we've got our regional express business has got such a fantastic relationship with Amazon. I was in Seattle, I think it was in March, and the reception that the team got, I was amazed at how good the warmth feeling is towards the guys. We're now working on a few projects with Amazon, and they should be having a promotion coming out, and we are supporting that promotion. And we now have over 1,000 USA customers who are trading with us on a direct basis, not through Amazon, but Amazon provide the sales team for us. It's a fantastic relationship. That will be expanding into other areas over the next year.
Excellent stuff. So, yeah, like I said, yeah, your final results are very impressive. That was for the last 12 months up to the 31st of December 2017. So let's look forward. What are your objectives for 2018, and is it looking as rosy there?
I think it's going to be better, actually, to be quite honest. Now that we haven't got the shackles of trying to get a listing away and dealing with lawyers and accountants with respect to them, and I am an accountant anyway, we can concentrate on the business, developing the business, giving good growth for the shareholders. We've got some really exciting projects that we're going to be doing. So all the teams need to carry on doing what they were doing so well last year, and we need to give them more fuel to feed that growth. So we're going to have continued acquisitions. So we went to the market on a buy and build. So having done 3-4 acquisitions last year, we will not be stopping, and we need to be doing another 3-4 at least this year, and then making sure those integrate. So we're looking at companies which predominantly will be easy to integrate. So our ideal company would be one where somebody's maybe retiring for the right reasons, and they have a great management below them, and it's going to be low maintenance from our side to integrate that business into our existing group. But it needs to be one where we're going to get some cross-sellings and some synergies. That's the type of acquisition we're looking for. So we're not looking for any companies which are going to be management intensive, where we have to do a turnaround. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be doing turnarounds. We want to be doing and buying well-managed businesses who generate cash and giving them more opportunity.
Yeah.
One of the most exciting areas for us this year will be eShop WeDrop, and I'm looking to spend, if I can, do 50% of my time working and developing that. It's massively exciting, and we've got some really good ideas that we want to be presenting to the market, at the same time as hitting the C part of the market on the B2C, and this is a B2C activity moving on our existing B2B lines. We'll also be approaching the e-commerce retailers and saying, hey, we can cover all of these countries for you now, and providing them with a much lower cost solution.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, Stephen, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of what you're doing and the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please?
Well, the first thing, as I said, right from the word go, we've got a massively experienced team, and they're the guys building the business. We will be introducing a share option scheme, and we want to fully engage as many of our 700-plus employees as possible. And also, when we're looking at doing M&As, we want to then bring in and tie in some of those guys. So we have a good corporate culture of all working in the same direction. That to me is a fundamental reason. We are working in high areas of growth, and our European road transportation is well established. But in particular, the e-commerce side and the e-fulfillment and e-shop WeDrop is highly exciting. And whilst the high street is suffering a bit, of course, that side of the business is growing. So we cover both ends of that market. That's the second reason. And of course, the third reason is we are successful. And there are a few of the shareholders I know like to have dividends. And therefore, we will maintain our policy of paying out 50% of post-tax dividends, post-tax profits as a dividend, with one-third in October, November, and two-thirds after the AGM.
Excellent stuff.
That's a good reason to buy.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I'm sure people will do their own research there and find some impressive figures there. Stephen, it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Okay. Cheers, thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil. That's UJO ticker. David, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Justin. Hello, everybody.
Yeah, 2 days, two bits of news, and we'll get into the news in a bit, David. Before we do, as always, for new listeners or people not aware of Union Jack Oil, could you summarise what the business is all about, please?
Yes, of course, be delighted. Union Jack Oil is listed, quoted on AIM, and we take interest in wells, late-stage exploration and production. And just recently, we've added to our production base with Keddington and Fiskerton Airfield. However, we've got some very nice tenders. As everyone knows now, part of the news yesterday was North Kelsey and Biscuitfort gaining planning consent, which is really good news for us. We can move forward. So we take interest in wells. We drill. We pay our part of interest in those wells, and hopefully we find oil and eventually get it out of the ground. That's what we do in a nutshell.
Yeah, and like I said, you are onshore, and you like the fact is, I mean, obviously, oil and gas is risky, but you try and play it, you try and play the risk down a bit, don't you, by looking at sort of,
yeah. Well, as you know, anyone that's heard me speak before, there's always risk. Nothing's ever 100%. We'd all be blinking rich if that was the case, but onshore is much less risky and also, obviously, less expensive, and we're never going to be the boys out in the North Sea. However, onshore, there's some really, really rich pickings out there, and we try and make the most of those with the budget we have and the money.
Okay, all right, well, let's go into yesterday's news. Biscuitthorpe and North Kesley planning update. Take us into what happened there and the significance and your interest, please, David, in these prospects.
Our interest in North Kelsey is 20, and in Biscuitthorpe it's 22.5%. So they're meaty chunks. You know, you're talking 20% and 20%, I suppose. And the significance is, without planning permission, you can't do anything. You can't move. You can't drill. So effectively, what happened yesterday, the council, the planning committee, they gave permission. Egdon did a good job, and all the people that worked for him in getting that, and, you know, I will say, and because we all know how difficult it is nowadays to get a plan, past a plan, especially with hydrocarbons, fossil fuels. Times are changing, and goes to show what a great job, you know, we have to puff them up today. They did a good job to get that through. And it means we can now plan, and or Eglinton can plan the partners, and we can look forward to drilling in the future.
Yeah, and what do you know about the resources there on Biscothorpe?
Well, Biscothorpe, obviously nobody really, really knows. Mm-hmm. But the plan is that there could be, in one target, 14, 15 million barrels of oil recoverable. And also, there is the chance that it might be something a lot bigger. And that lot bigger could mean 42 million barrels. Now, I'm not saying that. I'm not indicating that. You know me. I'm not going to do that. But is it potentially there? Yes. But we have to be sensible and say, look, go for the 14 million barrels. If you get anything more, then well done, everyone. Mm-hmm. But even that is some find onshore UK.
Yeah, and it's quite a high chance of success here, isn't it?
It is actually for onshore, it's 40%. Yeah. Reason being, BP drilled in 1987. They found a small structure of oil. It was very, very thin. They decided not to test, not to bother. You know, oil price was pretty low in those days, but times have changed. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not it would have been tested now, it might well have been. So it's really, I'm not going to say it's actually an appraisal well, but it's not far off of it.
Yeah.
But it's still got to be drilled. You know, one knows the score. There's always some sort of risk, whether it be geological, mechanical, whatever. So, but we you know, it's one of our nicest prospects. Of course it is.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to the day's news. And you've acquired further interest in two licences. Go through the you know, your thinking behind this, David, and what it means. And they're quite low cost, aren't they, to buy?
They're very low, yes. They're Celtic Energy are downsizing. And from a deal that we've done in the past with Celtic, we've got a great rapport, nice people to deal with. And we picked up these licences very inexpensively. As you know, Humber, our partners, are involved in this one as well. You know, they're beginning to make some inroads onshore, as we all know. And they're also a 12.8% shareholder in Union Jack, or the people involved with Humber are not Humber the company. Mm. So, you know, it's a poacher and gamekeeper together. So we're working nicely together. And the thought behind this is, you know, let me make it quite clear to shareholders, there's no way that we're going to be doing it unconventional, getting involved. But there's no budgets involved in these licenses. The only cost to us is our initial outlay, which is £7,500 each, and maybe £10,000 for keeping the licenses alive. And you know, our way of thinking is there's going to be some unconventional drilling going on. There's a few wells planned. We've actually got planning, and the companies are lining up to drill. Now, should there be a modicum of luck with that, then my gut feeling is that this whole thing is going to be maybe boom time. I'm not going to say it's going to be hundreds of wells drilled. That probably won't ever happen in our lifetime. But however, it all adds value. This is what we're all about, try to do. Mm-hmm. But as I say, we're not changing tack. We're a conventional oil company. However, this should be seen as an investment and nothing else.
So essentially, yeah. I mean, what you're saying is, I mean, this is a potentially unconventional prospect, but you won't be doing that, but you will hold that because there's planning things going on elsewhere in the country for unconventional companies. And should they have success there, then the value of these assets will rise and you could then farm them out,
yes,
or just sell them off. Is that right?
That would be our idea. It's an investment. Like, obviously, there's loads. There's scope. Let's just say that those licenses, for a very low outcome, out cash, gives us quite a lot of upside. So we see that the upside is a lot bigger than the downside.
Yeah. And what time frame do you expect to hold these for? When do you think value will be realised? Yeah,
we've no time frame. Look, you know, you can put your own. Or shareholders can put their own time on that, really. But these wells are scheduled to be drilled nearby middle of the year, end of the year. So should there be any success, of a see things start happening.
Yeah. Okay, so it's definitely there's action happening for companies involved in unconventional middle and towards the end of the year. Is that right?
For some of them, yes. Yeah. So it's well documented.
Yeah. No, actually, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm just asking because I'm not over it, but you are in the oil and gas industry, so you know this, and obviously it's nice to have that knowledge there. Excellent, David. Well, if someone's listening right now and they like the sound of what you're doing, but not yet following the story, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please?
Yeah, I'd be delighted. But as I usually say, there's always risk. Mm-hmm. This isn't by any means a slam dunk company. However, we've got some great chances. I think number one would be the news flow. The second situation is we're very, very transparent, and a lot of our shareholders know that. That's why they keep coming back to us. And we try to do, as we say on the tin, there's very, you know, a lot of, we do our best, and if we are going to be stopped, it's usually planning and things like that. It's not financial. But yesterday basically proved, in my opinion, that if you put a great job in, then the councils look at it very favourably. So maybe there's lots of lessons to be learned from other companies, or I don't know, but yesterday was a great, great day for us and our partners, of course.
Excellent, David. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. All the best, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stephen Chong, Chief Operating Officer of MySquare. That's MYSQ. Stephen, thanks for joining me again.
Pleased to be here, sir.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been quite a few months since we last chatted, and you've done a lot in the meantime. But before we go into some of the details of your developments and your progress you're making there at MySquare, for people listening right now who are not familiar with the company, can you explain or summarise what MySquare is all about, please, Stephen?
Certainly. MySquare is a Myanmar-focused social media, entertainment and payments company. We develop mobile apps and games that incorporate elements of Myanmar culture and language. And we currently have over 22 million registered users.
Okay, so rather than go through individual, I suppose, items or news items, it's probably best for me to ask you, what is new? What's happened? What's new at MySquare?
Quite a bit has happened since we last talked in late November of last year. We released our interim results at the end of March 2018. MySquare revenue last financial half year, ending December 2017, was US$340,716. Over the same period this financial half year, ending December 2018, revenue was US$917,180. This represents a growth of around 169%. So we're quite encouraged by this result. We also are repositioning ourselves by reducing headcount at our Vietnam operations. We have reduced headcount by 25% last month, but moving forward, we plan to grow headcount in Myanmar where our market is.
We also released a new version of MyFish in January 2018. This is one of our more popular games, and a refresh would go some way towards maintaining interest in and extending the life of this game. In March, we also launched a new strategy card mobile game called Wushu King. This is the second Wuxia mobile game MySquare has launched, and this brings the number of games published by MySquare to 11. We now have 7 hardcore games, 3 casual games, and 1 gaming platform with 9 mini-games. We remain the largest publisher of Myanmar language mobile games, and we aim to maintain our lead by continuing to publish a new game every 2 or 3 months. Minglaba Morning, our entertainment and lifestyle destination, continues to attract new users and retain existing ones. We have a section on Minglaba Morning where users can post questions and connect with other users who contribute answers to these questions. In this way, we are building a community of users who can gain and share knowledge and stay engaged with us. Users can now also upload and share videos on Minglaba Morning, and we've launched a marketplace section where users can post classified ads. MyChat has also been relaunched and rebranded as MyMinglerBar to better appeal to our user demographic of young 18 to 34-year-olds. MyMinglerBar is, of course, our mobile app developed for users to customize and personalize their MinglerBar morning experience. It has functions such as a newsfeed wall that shows users what they're most interested in. We have a sticker store, and there's also dating functionality that's pretty popular amongst the 18 and 34-year-olds. These products all increase user engagement, and with better engagement, MinglerBar Morning and MyMinglerBar would be of interest to potential advertisers and provide us with monetization opportunities. We've also raised £2.11 million, and this now puts us in a good position to seize any new opportunities that may come our way in the payments space. And finally, as recently announced, we've signed new agreements with Uber Remit and OKDollar, and we'll be launching a mobile money platform to facilitate cross-border remittance and e-wallet payments shortly.
Okay, well, let's go into that. Some of the payment solutions, I know it's a very hot area, hot sector there. So why are you moving into payments, and why remittances, please, Stephen?
Well, currently, only 10 to 20% of the population in Myanmar have a bank account. However, smartphone penetration in Myanmar is very high. It's over 95%. Thus, the potential for rapid adoption of digital wallets is there. Now, inbound remittances from the Myanmar diaspora is reported to be around $3 to $8 billion, depending on which report you go to. The bulk of this remittance volume comes from Singapore, Dubai, Malaysia, and Thailand, four countries where much of the Myanmar diaspora currently reside. With around 50% of these remittances occurring through informal channels, there is pressure to formalize cross-border remittances. This is a big market and a huge opportunity. What is needed is a properly regulated, trustworthy, convenient, and price-competitive mobile money platform. We aim to be that platform. Singapore has a sizable population of overseas workers and students from Myanmar, and it is therefore a natural starting point for us to open a remittance corridor. It is estimated that the volume of transactions per year between Singapore and Myanmar is between $400 to $800 million. We initially target capturing 1% of this market by offering convenience, safety, and a competitive fee and exchange rate. I don't know if you recall, the last time we talked, I mentioned that the key challenge to moving into the payment space is not technical, but regulatory. And finding the right partner with extensive cash-in, cash-out agent networks is key to success. We believe we've found the right partner in Uber Remit and OKDollar. Uber Remit is a cross-border remittance and mobile money transfer provider, and they have the necessary compliance and local and international partners to facilitate instant and fully compliant mobile cross-border remittance. They provide Forex delivery channels to over 50 countries. They have relationships with over 1,200 registered banks and have over 200 million mobile wallets downloaded. OKDollar, on the other hand, is a leading mobile payment and digital wallet operator in Myanmar. They offer online purchase, mobile phone top-up, bill payment, and in-country money transfer services. And they have an extensive network of agents nationwide, all across Myanmar. So, in essence, Uber Remit is our partner for sending money out, and OKDollar is our partner in Myanmar for receiving money and distributing it to our users.
What we bring to the table are users and an entertainment and lifestyle platform and marketplace that would encourage repeat transactions. You see, unlike other payment-only solution providers, we know what our users are interested in through their recent activity on MyGames, MinglerBar Morning, and MyMinglerBar. And whenever they use our cross-border remittance app to receive money, we also know when our users have money. This gives us the opportunity to push focused and relevant advertising to our users and encourage online in-app impulse purchases.
Furthermore, this alliance also allows us to develop more payment options for our users of our other products. As you may be aware, currently, our users pay for their purchases through direct carrier billing and mobile top-ups. Introducing e-wallets will eventually give our users yet another payment channel. Obviously, upon successful implementation of the Singapore-Myanmar remittance channel, we plan to expand into other markets with large Myanmar diaspora. And we'll open new remittance corridors from Dubai, Thailand, and Malaysia into Myanmar.
Excellent, Stephen. Well, listen, people listen to this and like the developments you're carrying out there at MySquare, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Certainly. Well, as I may have mentioned in our previous chat, we have first mover advantage, both in terms of being in a frontier market and in terms of product introduction. Secondly, we are high growth, as can be seen from our recent interim results. And finally, we're driving towards profitability. There you go.
Excellent stuff. Good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, Vernalis, V-E-R, ticker. At four, Cora Gold, C-O-R-A. I wrote a blog on them recently, a little blog on the weekend. Not last weekend, the weekend before last, worth the reading, I think. Well, I would say that, wouldn't I? I wrote it. I put the time and effort into it. At three, FGen Pharma, EVJ. At two, Bizant Resources, BZT, a tiny market cap. I wrote a blog on those last weekend. Also worth checking out. You'd be surprised to know. And number one, it's from a massive rise the last couple of days due to the deregulation or the allowing in America of sports betting, which I didn't know you couldn't do. It's banned. You can't bet on sports in America, which is odd, but Webis Holdings is in that environment. WEB, that's the most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Mayan Energy. Development of Zinc Ranch Field in Oklahoma. At four, Metal Tiger, Botswana Copper Silver Project. Major drilling campaign commences at T3 Dome. At three, Jangada Mines. Resources increase at Pedra Branca, a PGM project. At two, Rehobold Resources. Update on Coulter and Wick projects. And number one, most liked RNS, came from United Oil and Gas. Letter of intent signed for Coulter Drill. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.